Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
My agenda.
We're already recording, Charles.
Okay.
And here we are with Three Red Lights, episode 127. Hillary could not leave us alone. He is back already.
I missed you so much.
And we have Charles once again.
Yeah, what's up?
And for the very first time on the Three Red Lights podcast, Mr. Jim Riley.
I'm so nervous.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you?
First time with Hillary on the podcast. I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, we've had other firsts together, but it's first on the podcast.
Well, and just to be clear, Jim is our news editor.
I think I'm just an editor now, right? Is that?
You're still a news editor.
Yeah, yeah. I basically just write news all day, pretty much. That's all I do.
What if there's news breaking right now?
Oh well. I don't think anything's gonna happen this morning. So, but
he's got a spider sense for news.
Yeah, he does.
But yeah, I mean, I guess I don't know how much news has been breaking, Jim, because I think a lot of people have been sort of in review mode and sort of playing games. Yes, playing games. Surprisingly, that does happen from time to time here at IGN.
This is a good month to be playing games.
There are a lot of games.
But yeah, there's a lot of games coming out, and everyone, you know, earlier in the year is just like, oh man, everything got pushed till 2010. Then it's like, oh wait a second, there's still a ridiculous amount of games coming out.
Speaking of games, we should mention that Forza 3 review goes up tonight at midnight PST. I will be reviewing that. I will be writing that as soon as this podcast is over. I'll be writing up a Forza review.
And that is actually why Hillary has joined us once again, because we have Dan Greenewalt calling in shortly.
I believe Che is also going to call
in. And Che?
Yeah.
So we've got a couple guys from Turn 10, makers of Forza 3, who are going to tell us a little bit about that game. Hopefully.
Yeah.
About why it's amazing? I don't know.
Yeah.
Spoilers. I haven't played it yet, so I don't know.
I have not either.
You've judged by the package.
Yeah, basically. That's what I do. Takes me a bit. And for, longer role-playing games, I look at the package for, 40 hours or so.
Really stare at it.
I'd say it's a really crazy time right now because I have Forza. When I go home, I have retail copies of Forza, Brutal Legend now, Uncharted 2, and I think I got something else that I can't even remember that I'm not even looking at. I mean, there's a bunch of games now, and I have to. Oh, and Halo ODST, of course. Mm-hmm. And I sort of have to. It's hard to always choose. I'm kind of looking forward to the Forza review being done so that I can stop playing it and go on to something else. Not that Forza isn't good, it's just I can't really play.
There's so many games you just get
overloaded. I can't play Uncharted 2 right now because I have to keep playing Forza,
yeah.
You know.
I got Uncharted 2 yesterday and I can't play it yet because I've got so many other games to review.
I keep hearing Uncharted 2 is the greatest thing of all time. That's what everyone keeps telling me.
All of us here are just staring at it.
Yeah, yeah, we've got too much other stuff to deal with. But I did start playing Brutal Legend, and I guess we'll have that review on Monday from Damon, who has already beaten it. But yeah, that's cool. I mean, I've only played pretty much the stuff that I already played at preview events, but, I mean, the game's a lot of fun. It's really funny.
Yeah, I guess what I've been spending a lot of my time on is kind of 360-related, because there is a console version of this coming out sort of sometime next year. I'm not sure when. But it's Risen. It's a sort of open-world fantasy role-playing game from Piranabytes, who made the whole Gothic series, Gothic 1 through 3. And this is sort of their new game after they got sort of, there were some complications with the Gothic franchise after 3 came out. And in my opinion, it was kind of a buggy mess and not enjoyable to play whatsoever. So Gothic 4 is being made by somebody else, and it's not even called Gothic 4. It's called Arcania Gothic Tale. That is also coming to consoles, or is supposed to, next year.
This is so nerdy.
This is incredibly nerdy, but... It's
Can we
real...
talk about Divinity 2 for a little while, too? Just to really make sure everybody nerds out.
Well, I mean, I've been playing it on PC so far because it just came out last Friday, and I've found it to be really good. And anyone who's played Gothic before has absolutely liked the game. I haven't put up a review yet, but I've played through pretty much the whole thing at this point. And yeah, it's just, it's a lot of fun. But it's not the style of game that somebody who's played like Oblivion, where it's like Oblivion totally holds your hand. Like it's more in the Gothic style where it's like
smacked your hand.
Well, it doesn't really even extend a hand. Well, at least the earlier Gothic games,
it gives a finger.
It's just sort of like, well, you're in the game world, like more like Morrowind, I guess, where it's just like, you know, just sort of do what you want. And
that's
we're
true. Morrowind was like you got off the boat and it was into like be nerdy, you know.
Go ahead.
We
wander
dare
around
you.
In the muddled browns and grays of Morrowind.
I do remember, like, Morrowind.
I thought that game looked so good, and if you go back and look at it, now, you're like,
it did. It did look good at the time.
It barely runs on 360. But yeah, I mean, Morrowind was like the thing where you get off the boat, it, like within 5 minutes, you're creating a character, and it's all crazy RPG stuff. And then you start walking around, and it's like you're like, oh, I locked house. I'll try to lockpick that. It's like you need a much higher lockpick skill than you'll ever have.
Yeah.
It's like the first locked door is something that you can't pick until you're like level 25 or something.
So you go fight some mud crabs.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's the same sort of thing. I will say, though, that Risen definitely has a lot more hand-holding than previous Piranabytes games. So, I mean, there's still bits where they really... I mean, it's like, go get this map thing from this dude, and then you go get it, and then you're like, I have no idea what I'm supposed to do with this map after I get it. And they don't really
like
tell
life.
You. You just kind of have to figure it out.
And you just pick up some maps, and you're like, I don't know what to do with these maps.
I mean, aside from look at the map, obviously, that's of course an option. But
is the game better than Batman?
Those could probably not be more different games.
I've been playing Batman. Finally.
Okay.
I actually beat it for the first time about a week ago. So I think it's the game in the year 2009.
That's a pretty good game.
Yeah. Would you agree?
I still need to go through that.
I mean, I'd say of the games that I've played so far, yes, but I haven't played Uncharted 2, obviously Assassin's Creed 2, Modern Warfare 2. But so far, yeah, that would be, I think that's the best game.
No Street Fighter 4 love here.
Well, I'm saving my vote for Super Street Fighter 4 at this point.
Why would they put T-Hawk back in that game?
T-Hawk is awesome.
No, he's not. He's terrible. He's the stupidest idle animation ever. Who stands like that?
I like how Eric's doing the idle animation as if the listeners could actually see this.
Eric, I enjoyed it. I like the idle animation.
That was well done.
Eric's still doing it, by the way.
I'm just going to keep idling for the rest of this podcast.
Good times.
Yeah, I wasn't so happy about that, but...
But there are games aplenty flooding us, which isn't the point, I think. That's fun. Always makes it fun.
I still can't play most of them, so...
Well, yes, you say Batman's your favorite game of the year, but...
It's also the only game I've played this year, pretty much.
Well, there you go. By default.
it's a good one, though. A good one to play.
Technically, it's probably the worst game you've played this year, then, too, right? It's only your game.
That's actually a good point.
What's the worst game you've played this year?
Is it Batman?
I'd say... Put me on the spot here. Oh, Resistance 1. Yeah, I know. It's like 3 years late, but I finally put that in.
Mm-hmm.
Got on the cheap. It's terrible. Played the first two levels, like, done.
I'm sure you could find worse games than that. For instance, The Warrior Street Brawl, which came out on XBLA a little while ago. Which
was awful.
Darkest of Days, yeah.
Any
of those.
There's some stinkers out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough when you have to actually buy your games, to play them all.
Hey, whatever. I buy stuff.
Whatever. This is just.
Well, I do. I'm just
this
saying.
Year is just a tease for next year. The first
first
half of 2010 is going to be so insane. What have you got? Crackdown 2, Alan Wake, Mass Effect 2, Splinter Cell, Bayonetta, which looks actually really good.
Bayonetta. I got to play E3 for like I only played for 10 minutes, but that game felt real. Like it just the combos just felt like they worked. Like
It's like the first 4 months of next year are pretty much going to be like one of the best holiday seasons that we've ever had.
A lot of those things are going to get delayed into the fall.
Some of them are not.
Man, they keep saying Mass Effect is spring, but I would go to Vegas and put $100 on that going fall.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say Mass Effect 2 is not spring. It will be before spring.
What?
Oh, yeah. I put that there. Don't forget, winter officially starts to like December 21st.
Yeah.
And goes until March 20th,
so
I think.
So you're saying before March?
I'm saying it will be earlier than we think. I will say this. I think the only thing that will delay it is if EA says, like...
Hey, we'd like to make more money on this.
There are too many big games. Or if they're worried that they're not going to have anything for the fall, that they would just hold it off. But I think that game will actually be out before...
See, why would they want to do that? Because it seems like Dragon Age is so big that when that comes out this fall, people are still going to be like the hardcore Dragon Age BioWare fans, but still going to be playing that in like January, February.
I think that'll do really well on PC. I think the question is how well that will actually perform on console, because I'm sure that's one of their concerns.
I want to play it.
Yeah, I want to play it too.
And my PC sucks, so I'm going to play it on 360.
Yeah, I mean, I did get the chance to play it on 360 very briefly at a preview event a little while back, and it seemed to work all right. I mean, you get like little slots that you can put your skills and stuff like that. You can still pause the action and you know, check stuff out and do it through menus, so it's not like you're forced to do it all in real time anyway. So, I mean, that seems workable. It just depends on, I guess, the menu navigation, really, and if the graphics can perform.
The graphics.
If they can perform admirably. But yeah, I mean, there's still like what, like Bioshock 2 is coming out next year. They're supposed to be like Red Dead Redemption is supposed to come out at some point.
Yeah, and I think they said by spring. And then you've got Gran Turismo 5 is coming out in March.
Dante's Inferno, right?
Yeah. yeah, I mean, there seems to be a ton of stuff. So, and then of course we're probably going to have DLC for a bunch of the games that came out this year. So, I'd assume we're going to get, you know, Modern Warfare 2 map packs and
for $20 this time.
Yeah, why not? They sold so well.
$5 a map, do it.
Don't give them ideas.
Oh, I'm sure that's probably one of the lesser ideas. They're like,
don't forget the motion controller for PS3 is coming out in March as well. Everyone's excited about that.
The wand.
The wand.
What is that officially called? Is it called, just called the
PlayStation
PS3
motion
wand
control?
They don't have official name.
That's catchy. That's catchy.
Well, yeah. It's not Natal is not the official name for the 361 either.
Yeah, but that's what we call it.
Well, that's what they call it. That's the code name.
Well, the code name is Project Natal.
Project
not
Natal. What do you think they're actually going to call it?
I think
it's going to be something really bad.
No, I think they're screwed because they've gone on national TV showcasing Project Natal. I think that
it needs to stay Natal.
I think it would be ridiculous to change it now
that
they've taught people. Yeah.
Plus, but what do you think they could change it to that would be really hilarious? It's too bad Jeff Bell's not around.
Vision camera. Oh, no,
no
way.
No, remember, Microsoft's thing nowadays is they love like those really short catchphrase words that don't make any sense, like Bing and Zune. They love that stuff. So Natal fits right into that, where you're like, what the hell could that
possibly
mean?
It's two syllables, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Shut it down.
So Boone is what you're saying?
Yeah, Boone.
Boone cam? It's going to happen. I have no idea.
Call it the Voom?
Yeah. But, I mean, in terms of, like, Mass Effect coming out earlier, you'd figure, like, because BioWare's been saying since the start that there's going to be a ridiculous amount of Dragon Age downloadable content. Like, that they're just going to come out with that stuff all the time. So, yeah.
Well, I think there's Dragon Age content day one, so downloadable.
And day one stuff, yeah. So, I mean, you know, people will still be playing that for sure. And, like, on PC, at least, people are going to be using the, like, building their own stuff.
But to be fair, if you're a big BioWare fan and you've had Dragon Age since November, I mean, the minute that Mass Effect... I mean, I'm just saying, I think we would all buy both. Even if Mass Effect came out 2 months later, we wouldn't hesitate to buy Mass Effect 2. So.
I still think it's eating into your DLC profits. Because as soon as Mass Effect comes out, I'm not going to go play Dragon Age again.
I guess that's unknown territory. We don't really know the metrics of that, Eric.
It's true.
Yeah.
Personally.
You better get your metrics straight.
Yeah.
My metrics go all over the place. We all know that.
You better check your metrics, buddy.
But, I mean, I guess the surprising thing is how... I mean, I don't know if you guys have looked at this, but, like, a role-playing game will come out, like a huge role-playing game, and like 2 days later, people have already beaten the entire thing. Mm-hmm. And it's just like you go on like the official message board, and people are like, "I did not like the ending of this game." And it's like, how is that even possible? It's like I'm still in the intro zone, and you're like through the final end boss. Like, I guess there's some sort of correlation with either they're more efficient at playing, or maybe these people don't have
take some time off work, or
yeah, I guess people could take some time off of work or. If there is work, I guess.
Have you ever taken a day off?
Or just be so rich that they can sit at home and play.
Outside of when you were working at IGN, have any of you ever actually taken like a sick day or anything like that, or an actual vacation day to play a game?
I pretended to be sick when I was in like elementary school and high school. The first game I ever did it for was Road Rash. I pretended to be sick so I could sit at home, and I sat there on the first course just with that crappy first motorcycle you get, and I did it over and over and over and over again until I got enough money to buy like the Black Ninja bike.
Nice.
And then I just like took jumps through the entire game with that thing.
Wasn't that the bike that basically broke the game? Like you'd fly off of a hill and you wouldn't land for like
exactly.
5 minutes.
You would just fly right across the finish line with that thing.
The first time I ever pretended to be sick for a game in school was Super Metroid. I got Super Metroid, and it was one of those things where I got it, like, really late. Like, I got it at 9 at, like, 8 o'clock or whatever like that from Toys R Us or something. And then I wasn't allowed to really play it for very long before I had bedtime. So I pretend to be sick the next day. Did the old thermometer, like, near the light. Which is always one of those things because, one, you don't want your mom to come in while it's still up there. It's got to be in your mouth.
And you don't want it to go something crazy like 106 because then all of a sudden you're in the hospital.
Yeah, exactly. But you don't want it to be – but then you have to worry because you don't want it to not be very high and then put it in your mouth and have it cool down before your mom comes back because you never quite know, like, how long she'll disappear for because she never has a true sense of how long it takes to take a temperature. Mm-hmm. Could be 5 minutes, could be 10 minutes sometimes. So it's tricky, but I managed to nail it down. Did the sick thing, you know, got out of it, got to play Super Metroid all day. It was amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I think I probably missed out on geography that day. So that's why I don't know whether Africa is a country or a continent.
Well, all you got to know is Mexico's north, Canada's south.
Yep.
That's how it works.
Oh, that's the other one I probably missed.
Yep.
Then.
Not to sound like a nerd, but I had perfect attendance all through school.
So. Nerd.
Perfect.
Yep.
Wow, that's...
All through high school, all 4 years. Wow. At college, I don't think I missed many classes. But yeah, in order for me to be sick and not go to school, I had to literally be like throwing up in my bed in order for my mom not to like, all right, yeah, you're home.
Yeah,
I could fake that.
After I faked sick once or twice, my mom wisened up. And then that sucked because you get screwed. And then you try to pretend to be sick, or you actually are sick, and you're still going. Either which way, you're going. And then...
Boy, we cried wolf, am I right?
Yep.
Oh, man, I came up with so many great excuses.
20 years later.
I told, we had a carpool. I told the carpool person when they showed up that I couldn't go because my dog buried one of my shoes.
What?
It was awesome. She bought it, too. She was like, oh, okay. But then the problem was when she got home after dropping the other kids off at school, she called my mom and was like, I just want to let you know Hillary couldn't go to school because the dog buried a shoe. And my mom called me and was like, get your ass to school now.
Nice. Yeah, that's not the best excuse.
it was a lame excuse.
Well, someone bought it apparently. So
yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, I guess
some poor trusting fool.
I guess I never really faked being sick, but I did get living around the Great Lakes area around Buffalo. I did have an incredibly convenient series of snow days. The 2 days after I got Legend of Zelda: Ocarina of Time. Like, there was basically an epic blizzard, and I got to wow. sit home on 2 snow days and play that game all day.
Which, by the way, the weirdest thing is when you live in San Diego, every, like, once in a blue moon, every few years, like, you'll actually have a very minor hailstorm. And so you'll be in class, and hail kind of comes down, and it sort of creates a little bit of mush on the ground. And people act as if God is cramping gold outside. Like, teachers are like, everybody go outside, start throwing snowballs. And it's like people are trying to pack hail into a ball, which is just an awful thing. And everybody's so excited because for 5 minutes, and it really does only last 5 minutes before it's all melted. Everybody thinks that, like, something amazing has happened to us. It's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory for everybody.
It's global warming. That's what it is.
Yeah, so. See, it probably never happens anymore in San Diego.
I grew up in the Northeast, and we got our fair share of snow days, but we also had a superintendent of schools who had major, major problems. And he would sometimes just decide to cancel school and give us snow days when it wasn't snowing at all. So occasionally I would wake up, and it would be like 50 degrees and raining, and like the radio would be like, and, you know, you don't have school today. And my parents would get so mad. It was pretty awesome for us, though, except we had something like 35 snow days 1 year. So we were going to school, like, until the 4th of July because they keep stacking them on the end.
Yeah, listening to that, like, crawl either on the – or watching the crawl or listening to it on the radio used to be the greatest thing of all time. You're like, my God, it's snowing so hard outside. Wait for it. They're going in alphabetical order and score. Yes, not going in. Awesome. Don't have to ride the stupid bus. Mm-hmm. That was pretty good. But, yeah, I never actually – like, if I was ever sick – I'd never really feel like playing a video game. I don't know about you guys, but if I was legitimately sick, I'd just be like, I can't move right now.
When I had mono in high school, I still kept going to school, but when I got home, I basically couldn't do anything. And so I played Bust Move 2 on Sega Saturn pretty much every single day for like a month and a half.
That's terrible.
It was awesome. The game's great.
did you win?
Oh, nobody could beat me at that game after that.
It's too bad we don't have Dave on here, because Dave does have the best game story ever, or worst, when he got Lyme disease, and he couldn't get out of bed, so he just played Morrowind for like a month.
That is definitely a game to sort of dive into if you're in that situation. What are there, about 8 billion dungeons in that game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the role-playing games, or the MMOs would be a good thing to do as well.
And on that note, we are going to have to pause for a second to allow the Turn 10 guys to call in.
Yays.
All right, and we are here with Dan Greenewald and Che Chu from Turn 10 Studios to talk about Forza 3, and we're going to let Hillary take the reins on this because he has been playing this game so much over the past month.
I have the fortune and the misfortune of, one, playing pretty much through all six seasons on the debug version they sent me, and the minute that I finished season six, I got a retail version. And then I was like, man, I have to play through this all over again. Those seasons start to get really long. The season five and season six are incredibly long. So it's been great to be able to play through the game twice, but it's certainly eaten away at my marriage.
I'm actually doing the same thing. I got to level 35 on my dev kit, and now I'm at level 10 or something. So starting over.
I don't mean to brag, but I've totally passed you by on the retail version. I think I'm 36 now. Yeah. So let me ask you this. Now that you guys have finished with the game, obviously, since we have a retail disc of it, was there anything that maybe didn't make the disc that you wish you could have done?
Not really. I mean, we really took our time on this one and tried to scope our work fairly early. We reorganized the team to give the team the ability to kind of divide and conquer and do more features and do them to a higher quality level. So there wasn't really anything that we, I guess what it comes down to is the only things we still had that we didn't do were things that we thought are more like a year out, 2 years out, things that we needed to invest in new technology in order to do. But no little features or little polish.
Cool. So maybe for people who don't know too much about Forza, can you talk about the career mode? Because that's actually one of the biggest changes from Forza 2.
Well, I think even you would be able to speak to this pretty well. When you restart your career, I imagine your career is very different this time than it was last time.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I think all of this comes down to our vision. So the vision of this product, the vision of this franchise from the beginning was to turn gamers into car lovers and car lovers into gamers. It was about passion. And so while we have 400 cars in the game, my expectation is you don't play all of them. And the season mode, the new career mode, is actually meant to accentuate that. So as you're playing through the career and you go buy a car, for example, like I got about 15 minutes into the career, maybe 20 minutes into the career in the retail copy, and I went and bought my real-world car, an Audi S4. Well, at that moment in the game, you can buy like 80 different cars in the game, more cars than most games even have. And the moment you do that, the career starts changing what it offers you. So I got offered the M3 versus S4 challenge and the Audi track day and the all-wheel drive club and the elite all-wheel drive, and it started feeling like a very customized kind of quattro game, like I was playing Forza Motorsport Audi edition. And that's how the season mode works. So instead of just dropping you into the deep weeds of here's 220 events, figure it out, the game actually looks at the cars you own and the types of cars you're into and sort of your passion and suggests events for you and drops them into your calendar. So, and again, hopefully stokes passion for cars, teaches you new things about cars, and the cars you are interested in, it rewards you for liking them.
So one of the things that I noticed about the game is when I played Forza 2, I found it a little bit difficult to play, to drive some of the cars with all the assists off with a controller. But I actually haven't had that issue with Forza 3. I mean, obviously there are some cars that are really high-end that you just have to really kind of be very cautious in how quickly you accelerate and brake. But I've been able to actually drive every car and not get frustrated. And, you know, that's something I think that's kind of unique for sim racing games with all the assists off. Like, what did you guys do to adjust stuff so that people could actually play with a controller with kind of close to the same level of control that they get from a racing wheel?
Well, you know, it takes a little bit of trickery, but I think it's 2 points. The first thing is our simulation is better. And the fact that the tires have now tire flex and they've got the tire springiness and the way the tires just interact like a big complex weather system, it actually makes the tires easier to understand what's going on. They talk to you more. They're more forgiving. And so it's actually by being more of a simulation, the cars got easier to just control and talk to. But I think more importantly, and what you're speaking to more directly, is some changes we made to the layer between the controller and the physics. So our goal is never to make compromises on the physics. So we never do anything Arcadian there. Everything that we've learned about simulation through our partnerships with McLaren and Pirelli, we've included it all to be just on the total cutting edge of simulation. But you don't drive a car in the real world with a controller. And if you did, you'd kill yourself pretty quickly. So what we have to do is put in a layer that kind of reads your mind. If you're going tap, 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 full left, you don't want to go full 900-degree, you know, rotation to the left in a split second. What you're trying to do is, hey, I kind of want to be a little bit less than peak friction. And so we've got buffers in there, as well as a little bit of kind of, it is like reading your mind, to know, okay, you're counter-steering, but you don't want full counter-steer, or you're turning in, or you've been doing kind of a flick left to right. And it reads your mind a little bit and puts those layers in. Now, the wheel, of course, we strip all that out. So when you're driving to the wheel, you're driving the raw physics. But that controller layer, we've been learning. You know, we worked on racing. I worked on racing games long before Forza Motorsport, and we had those layers in those games. And we continue to learn new tricks by watching players drive and learning more about what do they really intend to do when they're hitting tap, 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 or full left, or full right, and can kind of do that for them.
So I like that Forza 3 includes mind reading. That actually seems like a technology that's more advanced than Natal.
I think it comes down to studying people. Yeah.
Speaking of Natal, you know, one of the demos that Microsoft likes to show is people playing Burnout standing up. I know that I like to drive standing up. but I mean, the thing that
you've got a segue, huh?
Exactly. Well, I'm pretentious. I own a Prius and a Segway, so I park my Prius in a handicapped spot because when you drive a Prius, you're allowed to park wherever you want.
You just do whatever you want.
Yeah, right. and then I pull out my Segway.
You've got the moral high ground.
Yeah, I pull out my Segway and then I drive on the sidewalk with it. So
now, if only they combine the two. If you could drive your Prius using Segway leaning controls, you know, you'd have the ultimate moral high ground.
Yeah, I tried that. It's a bad move to just put the Segway inside the Prius. It doesn't work.
Yeah, is a Segway maybe a potential DLC for you guys?
I have not even considered that. You're gonna ask a lot of questions. There's a new one for me.
I was thinking, I mean, that would have been...
It's totally intentional.
I'm saying that would have been a great reward for beating, finishing out the sixth season in career mode. Mm-hmm. You know, I beat that, and then it's like, get out of the car, get on a Segway.
I think if you threw some racing slicks and a roll cage and maybe some downforce...
roll cage.
I'd love to see that on YouTube. So, you know, if you get that worked out, please send me a link.
Hey, Hillary,
let me ask you one thing.
Sure.
So if you went through six seasons, you played through a lot of the endurance races, am I correct?
Ooh, yeah.
Okay, so tell me about your relationship with the rewind button. I mean, how did you feel about that as a reviewer? I mean, there's a lot of controversy out there among hardcore gamers about what the rewind button means to them personally and whether it makes them feel less hardcore or whatever. I mean, how did you feel about it as you were doing those endurance races?
Well, here's my take for you. So I know what you guys say, which is your line is that you don't want to punish people for using the rewind, which I think is fair. My thing would be I feel that, I mean, first of all, anybody who's hardcore, don't use it. There you go. You never have to actually hit the back button and use the rewind. So if you think that changes the game for you, just don't use it at all. I think that it's an easy temptation, though. I think it's really hard not to use it. And to my knowledge, you can't actually turn it off in the menus. And that was the one thing is that I totally agree that you shouldn't be punished for it. But, you know, I don't get punished in the game, right, for playing, like, with automatic shifting, right? But I get a bonus if I switch to manual. I get a cash bonus. So to me, I do think that there should have been an option that if I turn off rewind, that I would get a cash bonus basically for that. You know, everything else is, you know, you can get to that times two cash bonus if you turn all the assists off, do manual with clutch, and play with the hard AI. And to me, you could add one more thing where you get a 10% by, you know, cash bonus by not using rewind, because then you're doing pure racing, and you're not punishing somebody for using rewind. You're just saying
rewarding them for not
you're rewarding them if they race as pure as possible, which is what all the other stuff leads to. But to me, I use it. I used it. I mean, to me, I would hate a racing game where I've been racing for like 40 minutes and, you know, then I make one mistake or worse, you know, I get tapped from behind and I spin out and it's like the race is lost to me, especially because I play, you know, with like full wear and tear, which like those endurance races, like honestly, the first five seasons, you never really see the effect of that. Certainly not for like, you know, the wear on your tires, the gas, all that stuff. But like when you get to those endurance races, like that stuff does actually start to make a difference. And all those little minor dings that you do with other cars and other races don't really have a factor, but they definitely do in the last season when you start hitting those endurance races. And yeah, for me not to have the rewind, like I would just hate to go through so much of that and then get screwed over. Like I hated Grid drove me crazy because they had like the Le Mans races, you know, that were long, and you had like a limited number of rewinds, and you know it always drove me crazy that if you got on that last lap and you'd already used the three rewinds you had or whatever, you just get that you'd almost like I would actually race worse because I would be so afraid of making that one mistake. Mm-hmm. So I do appreciate that in Forza that it's like, look, if you're gonna have it, just you know let it be free. Don't you know kind of ping people for it. If you're gonna have rewind and just let people use it whenever they want. I mean.
The thing you might have already found, we certainly found when we were playtesting the game, was that people are turning their difficulty up. Mm-hmm. Because when you turn the difficulty up, for 90% of the race, you're getting great wheel-to-wheel action. It's really fun. The AI's attacking. You know, you're really in a hard heated battle. But usually when you get in that cruising altitude and you're a few hours into a racing game, you really want to win. And so you end up turning the difficulty to a point where you know you can still make one big mistake and come back and win. Well, that makes most of the race really boring because you're way ahead of the AI until you finally make that mistake you were waiting for. And what we found is people were just turning the difficulty up higher than they probably would have in Forza Motorsport 2 or any other racing game. And having now the 90% of the race is more wheel-to-wheel, that's more attacking with the AI. And that's really cool to see, just that it's having that effect on people's playing.
No, I'd agree with that. I think it really frees you up from the beginning. And, I mean, to me, you know, I think that the game with, like, most of the assists on, certainly, like, things like traction control and stuff, I think that really sort of mutes the sort of the effect of driving each different car. Like, the more assists you have on, the more every car feels the same. But when you're able to peel off the layers and drop most of the assists or all of the assists, I mean, you can really feel the difference from one car to the next. And you can actually kind of almost appreciate a car that is a high-end car that actually drives and controls well and is stable over a lot of the cars that, you know, as soon if you gun, you know, the gas or something like that, you know, you're going to lose all your traction. So, I mean, it's a great way to appreciate the cars, and you're just not going to get that if you have to play with all the assists on. And I think a lot of people would not play with the assists off if, you know, one mistake ended the race for them.
Exactly. I think, kind of to what Dan was saying, I never used to play Forza 2 on hard AI because the AI is, like, very hard. And if you aren't, you know, if you're not stepping up to your game every corner, getting the right line, you're not really catching up to them. Well, now with the rewind button, I'm actually playing on hard AI, and I'm finding that I can redo corners that I screw up on, and I do eventually catch up to the hard AI. And I, you know, that battle for first place with M. Rossi is always kind of always comes down to that last lap. You're gritting your teeth, and you're just like on the last corner, kind of a thing. So to me, it evolves the game into a different kind of tension than it used to be. To me, there still is a lot of tension there. I mean, just because you rewind doesn't mean you don't have to, you know, get that corner right. You still have to do it. So, I don't know, to me, it does change the game into a different kind of attention.
And I think it does teach you, and I think it's a great replacement, actually, for the racing lines. Like, I think the tools, you know, especially for, you know, showing you, you know, when to brake and how hard to brake for those racing lines that appear. Like, but if you have the rewind, I mean, I think it actually is more helpful to learn on your own because you become too dependent on just following what the line teaches you. And I think if you turn those off and just let, you know, correct your mistake with the rewind, you'll actually more quickly and better learn how to take corners, especially with specific kind of cars and stuff. So I think it's like the rewind to me is like a great teaching tool too.
Yeah.
So the game's pretty good, I guess that's what I'd say.
Yeah, that whole conversation made me really want to play the game, basically.
No, it's, I mean, it's, I mean, it's surprising just how different it is. I mean, I think everything, even, you know, what's interesting is that you have actually a lot of the tracks that you guys had in Forza 2, but, you know, you can just see the difference visually in them, you know, for everything from the lighting and the better frame rate and all of that. Like, because you can instantly compare, you know, Laguna Seca to, like, from 2 and 3, I mean, it's great to be able to look at a couple of those things and just kind of see how much better the game looks. So speaking of all the content that's on this game, there's too much to fit onto one DVD. So when you get the game, it'll come with two discs, and you have the option to install a little over 100 cars and 29 tracks on disc 2. So, Dan, maybe if you can explain sort of how disc 2 works.
Well, as soon as you boot up Forza Motorsport disc 1, then it kind of prompts you to install disc 2. And if you've got space in your hard drive, or depending on which stuff you want, you can install it. And it functions just like DLC did in Forza Motorsport 2. But what's really cool is how the career actually integrates it. So as soon as you install it, you know, new cars can be purchased, and new cars show up in your AI fields. So the career just kind of absorbs it. And so it's not required, because obviously even with the single disc, you've got 300-plus cars, and you've got, you know, so many tracks, and a very, very complete single player. But if there's that car that you really wanted to drive, maybe a car you had in high school, like a 94 Civic hatchback, right, you can just install it from disc 2 and go play it through your career.
Cool. None of that stuff will necessarily affect the career mode, correct? If I don't have the space to install a disc 2, career mode is not really going to be affected too much.
Yeah, hardly at all. I mean, there's so many events in the career, and there's so many cars already on disc 1 that we still have full AI fields, and you can still do the events and see lots of have great racing action. It just kind of, it's more like a back catalog, I guess, is a way to think of it. It's cars that we had in Forza Motorsport 2 that we wanted to add up-res and add new features to and put cockpit. And, you know, obviously, if we're going to do a car, we're going to do everything for it. So cockpit, damage, customization, rollover, all of that. And it's hard to pick which cars you want to carry forward. So we carried forward as many as we could.
So I will say my only beef, honestly, with disc 2 is that my three favorite racing environments are the three that are on disc 2. And that the, because you can download the individual packs, so you can just say, I want the Asian racing car pack or the U.S. pack or the European pack. And those are actually small enough to fit on a 512 megabyte memory card if you don't have a hard drive. However, the racing environments are too big to fit on a memory card because there's I think it's like 700 megabytes, so you have to have a hard drive. And I would argue those are my three favorite tracks. So if I did not have a hard drive, I'd probably be crying.
They are great tracks. But, you know, the career goes on without them. So you can't actually do the full career and,
right.
You know, even without those tracks. But, yeah, they're great tracks. They're a really different style of track, which is why we section them off.
Yeah.
The other tracks are more traditional circuit tracks, and those three tracks are a little more like a road rally. You know, there's just so much more distance you're traveling; it's almost impossible to memorize those for most people. So it's a different style entirely.
Yeah, I was hoping you guys would add navigators to some of those. Yeah, I think that's actually why I love rally racing games, so I think that's probably why those tracks actually appeal to me.
Mm.
So one of the other things that you guys are bringing back that I think was probably the biggest hit of Forza 2 is the livery editor. Now, I'm not in any way an expert on using the livery editor. I can basically make basic shapes and stuff
smiley
that,
faces.
Like, yeah, smiley faces and stuff that's embarrassing. it's like I'm a fifth grader doing an art project with it. So I actually don't understand what has changed from it, because it looks to me very similar, and I'm not versed enough in the livery editor to know what you've improved in it.
Well, part of the thing is the vision of the livery editor. Our take on UGC is not just, hey, we want to give people customization. We're trying to actually make a class of person that's a hand crafter, you know, someone that's a real craftsman. And that means giving them extremely powerful tools. So we were left with an option at the end of Forza 2. Did we want to try and make everyone into a little bit of a craftsman by making something easy? or reinvest in the true craftsmen and embrace the true power of UGC, which is getting craftsmen that make the community stronger, because everybody else just gets in line to be a consumer. So we actually hired Fred Howell, who is a painter out of our community, and he helped us design ways of making it more powerful for great painters like he is. So one of the big changes is you don't have to paint on the top of a Mini Cooper anymore when you want to do kind of a mural. You can go into the vinyl editor, or the layer group editor, and you can put up grid lines and replicate something that maybe you've hand-drawn on a sheet of paper, and then it's done on this sort of flat space, and then you can put it up in your storefront for people to download and buy. So it's for those guys, for that, you know, I don't know, is it 1%? Is it even less than 1% of these truly power users? They're going to be prolific now. They can make really, really cool artwork much faster, much easier, and then they can distribute it and go to the top of those painter scoreboards.
Yeah, and you mentioned the storefront real quick, but I mean, that's, even though there's very few people that actually have the retail disc right now, I still check the storefront every day hoping that somebody will have created something cool that I can download and pretend was mine. Can you talk a little bit about how the storefront works and the leaderboards and even how, like, tuning setups work with that too?
Yeah, you know, it's really a big suite of features. Like, it was always hard when people would say, hey, what's the thing you added to Forza? And I'm like, are you kidding me? I mean, Forza's gotten really big, and even in the storefront, it's hard to kind of summarize in one or two words. We have these powerful editors, and those attract different types of intelligence. In fact, we approach the design problem from more of an educator standpoint, looking at what are the different types of creativity we want to reward in our universe. And that included painters, obviously, and it included people that take great photographs, and it included tuners. So our upgrade area is now deeper, more robust, it has more gray area, it has more deep grass for you to get lost in, and that allows those really creative tuners to make the most out of the system, to kind of trick the system. And then they can post those tuning files onto their storefront, and as people download those tuning files, they rate them, they give this tuner money, that tuner will go to the top of the tuner scoreboards. So if you're a consumer, you can just go onto the storefront and find what Turn 10 has highlighted. Or if you found a tuner that you really like off the scoreboards, for example, or through word of mouth, you can mark them as a favorite, and it makes it really quick to go find their storefront and see what they've done this week. Or if you're just getting into it, you can just go to the storefront straight out and see who are the power tuners, who are the power painters, and become a fan of their work and start following it week in and week out. What's really cool about this, you know, as you mentioned, there's... right now, there's maybe 100 people that are, you know, posting on our retail stuff because it's obviously just reviewers and people in the studio. And then our MVPs are starting to get involved. But when this goes out so that there's millions of people in the community, that 1% is still like 100,000 and more people. The stuff you're going to see on the scoreboards, frankly, I don't think any of us are capable of imagining yet, because you have to get it in that creative group's hands before they'll do things that just kind of shock you.
Yeah, I remember when Forza 2 came out, we would try to get our users, we would basically every week for a couple of months, we would just give them a task. We would say, make an IGN car. Mm-hmm. Like, we've had people make some Mario and Zelda cars and stuff. And the things some people would submit, I mean, were just incredible, like mind-blowing, like what some people could come up with.
Yeah, you guys should, you could have like an IGN storefront, and then, basically you can have your readers gift you stuff that they design, like IGN liveries, IGN logos, you know, pictures of your face, whatever. And then you could offer all of that up on your storefront for people to buy or get for free.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. I'm going to make it look like the sidebar of my math notes in eighth grade. That would work.
I think first car I need is a crib sheet. Mm-hmm. That'd definitely help out. So there's one other area that we haven't touched on that you guys did a bunch of improvements that I actually think this is actually the most impressive part. I know you guys are all about the physics and the cars, but I thought that the level of customization in the multiplayer is probably more than I think I've seen even in most first-person shooters. So you kind of talk a little bit about how the multiplayer setup works and kind of the stuff that you can do with it.
Well, even like Livery Editor, it is kind of and the storefront, it's kind of a suite of features that we added hoppers, similar to what you see in Call of Duty and Halo, And those are like trains that take off from the train station, and they've got set destinations that we've guaranteed are good destinations. And players can get in a party, Xbox Live party, go with their friends onto this train, get with other people they don't know, and start having a good time. So once you start looking at the Hopper system, you kind of got like the quick pick-up-and-play, really fun experience taken care of. And so then you look at, well, what can we do for depth? And when it came to depth, we just wanted to make almost like a scripting engine where you could go in and layer all of these different options, like keep it clean, where you're not supposed to get damage, and make it a team race, and put different classes of cars that are locked, and, you know, layer all of these rules together and hopefully capture that same creativity that we have in the livery editor and in the tuning area from our social coordinators, people that just know how to make good rules out of this. And then we can bake that into the hoppers. So, like in PGR, people started playing cat and mouse, and there was no real rule set. You kind of had to use an honor system about how cat and mouse was really working. Well, now you can actually bake those rules in, put in variants, and if it starts taking off in our community, we can pull it out and make it a hopper. And that becomes a cool pick-up-and-play experience for everybody in the community. So, again, it's like a suite that self-feeds. You use the craftsmen, you use the creative people to feed the rest of the community and make it stronger.
Cool. And I don't think that we could possibly have an interview with Turn 10 without asking about, you have one sort of monster competitor out there that's announced their release date for March of 2010. what do you guys think about what's going on with Gran Turismo, and like how do you guys view them?
Well, obviously, you know, We've been competing with Gran Turismo for years. That's obviously, it's the most obvious comparison between Forza, and it's the most obvious comparison for Gran Turismo is Forza. So it's a natural thing to be talking about. For me, you know, we have a lot of GT fans on the team, including myself, and, you know, when the game comes out, I'm going to play it. The thing I feel kind of badly for is that, you know, it's hard to make games. And they've got a very high-quality bar. Kazunori Yamauchi-san and Polyphony Digital, they obviously, they're a great team. You know, I don't know what struggles they've run into that have made the slips happen, but I can tell you, as being a developer that's made demos, like going to E3, and even making our demo we just released on Marketplace, it takes a lot of your team. It takes a lot of focus to polish something that you want to put out. And so every time you make a little product or a little demo or anything like that, you know, it takes focus from your team, and it makes, you know, keeping your eye on the prize, the big release, even harder. So is that what's happening with them? I don't know. I know that would be very hard for us to make, you know, multiple games, all releasing and multiple demos and all these things. It's just really, really hard. And they're a great team, so I'm sure they're going to have a great product when it releases.
Cool. Well, thanks. Both of you, or Che, did you want to say something too?
Well, I just want to add that, you know, I think GT, they do what they do super well, and but at Turn 10, our focus is a bit different. I mean, we focus on UGC and community, and we focus on customization, and it's just something we're passionate about, and they're passionate about other things, right? And so, and you can see it in their graphics and everything. So, I think it's two big teams with very high-quality bars going after kind of different visions of the same genre. And like Dan said, the comparison is obvious. You know, but it's a little bit shocking to see how deep the battle lines have been drawn and sort of where the fans of both sides have been taking it. And we just kind of sit back, and sometimes it's amusing, sometimes it's disheartening, but it's all, you know, it's just video games and it's all business, so whatever.
Yeah, what's also console battle lines, too. I mean, mm-hmm. It's not just that these are exclusives for each platform, but it's like these are one's published by Sony, one's published by Microsoft. So whichever one wins in the fans' eyes basically wins the console war, I think is how it goes. No pressure.
Well, I think that's actually the hardest part, is being caught up in something where, you know, as I said, we've got great respect for their team, and they're doing great work, and the development community is not very vitriol. You know, we share things at GDC. We've all been through these hard crunch cycles, and so I think we feel a lot more, it's not very competitive down, you know, at the troop level. And you're right, we're caught up in this kind of, there's the console war, obviously there's the genre war, but then there's even these undertones now coming through of, like, Western development versus Eastern development. Mm. It's like the war just keeps escalating into these terms where I'm like, you know, look, this it's this is not even the Jets versus the Sharks, much less, you know, some giant army from one country from another. It's just not at that scale. You know, we got a vision. We're trying to entertain people. We're trying to get a fan base really excited. And more than anything, I think both teams are really trying to do the same thing about getting people excited about cars. We're passionate about cars. We want people passionate about cars. And I think that's what keeps us coming to work every day, not some battle and some war and some this and that. But what gets me excited is getting, you know, my sons and the kids on our team excited about cars the same way we are. And that's really what the game's all about, not some big warfare.
Danny, your beard.
Yeah.
You're a part of beard.
Yeah, the
Spartans.
For people who don't know, Dan looks like he was an extra in 300.
I don't have the chiseled chest by a long shot. I think they've got that one on me. I am a game developer when it comes down to it, so I eat a lot more cream donuts.
But the bonus is that you're still alive, so you've got one up on them.
That's true.
Well, thanks, guys, for taking the time out. And Forza is not even going to be out in the U.S. until October 27th. So this has really been a giant tease for most of everyone who's listening to this.
Yeah.
But if you want, anybody's welcome to come over to my house. We just hang out and play Forza. You know, that's cool.
I don't think your wife likes that too much.
That's true. And I lied. I have a cop who lives two doors down from me, so watch out. All right, Dan and Shane, thanks for taking the time out. Great game, and you know, we look forward to, you know, hey, four to four. Get to work.
All right, later, Hillary.
All right, see you guys.
And you know, that conversation midway through reminded me of something from when I was in.
Was it another conversation about Forza?
No.
Oh. Okay.
It reminded me when I was in Tokyo. I was in Akihabara, which is their like electronics district, and I saw a memory card for Xbox 360. It was a third-party one, but it plugged into the memory unit, and it had an additional little slot in that memory unit for a micro SD card, and it came with like a 50 gigabyte or something, some absurd giant flash memory card, and apparently it just plugged in, and it was like it cost like $50, and it just put everything that Microsoft does in the U.S. with their $150 hard drives to shame.
Oh my god, that sounds so awesome and yeah. Sensible.
Yeah, I was looking at it, I was like, oh my god, now this is the full realization of how much we are getting screwed in the U.S.
Oh god, we are getting so no punched in the face that? With that stuff. I don't know. Because it wouldn't work properly.
Because it would get corrupted and then you would just cry.
Because your save files would get corrupt and then your entire 700...
I'm having flashbacks to the Dreamcast all over again.
Yes. Charles, perhaps your soul would be corrupted.
That's also possible.
But anyway, let's do some quick reader mail before closing this out.
Okay. All right, what am I starting with here? I'm going to go with this one. It's not Hillary Golden Balls anymore. I don't know exactly what that means, but the title is Weenies, and it starts with, so expletive, I'm a young gamer, still in high school, and I recently pre-ordered Modern Warfare 2, and I'm planning to go to the midnight launch. Just wanted to say, because this is my first major gaming nerdiness event, and I was a bit interested in what all of your first nerdiness events. So I think he's trying to ask if what was our first like launch or time we geeked out.
Well, my first tip would be bring condoms.
yeah, I mean, I'll,
well, they're
I'll...
great. They're great for holding water, mm-hmm. And also you could get laid. You never know.
Yeah, I think
I don't think there'll be many girls at that event.
Just, no, probably thinking, not.
But
not that there's anything wrong with that.
I didn't really go to many midnight launches before working at IGN. I went to the Halo 2 one in Times Square. That was fun.
That's not bad.
Yeah, they didn't really have a lot of launches around in Buffalo, and honestly, I never had a lot of money before I started working, so I couldn't really travel anywhere or buy a lot of stuff at all. So,
I stood in line to get a Dreamcast when it came out, but they didn't have midnight launch. It was just like you stood outside Toys R Us with five other people at like.
See, I had just pre-ordered mine
morning.
At Toys R Us.
Yeah,
and there was no line.
I pre-ordered mine, and then I showed up 5 minutes before the store opened, uh-huh. And there was like 10 people there. And then,
oh wow! Really?
Because you wanted to make sure you got, you know, your three games or whatever.
I was so excited. Dreamcast.
Until I came here, I don't think I ever. No, that's not true. When I was in college, I worked in a comic book shop, and the Star Wars Episode 1 came out, And my manager in the comic book shop was a humongous Star Wars nerd, so he bought everybody who worked there tickets. But he actually stood in line for the whole thing, and I showed up maybe a half hour before they let people in.
That was what I did with the Star Wars Episode One. One of my friends stood and waited for like 2 days to get us tickets, and then I just walked in and got the ticket.
Yeah, and you get these angry looks from people who've been camped out there forever, and you're just like, hey, buddy, I brought some McDonald's. And everybody's like, how dare you? And then I saw the movie, and I was like, this is horrible. Yeah. Poor Clayton bought, because he thought it was going to be the second coming, he bought four tickets in a row. So it was just like back to back to back to back. And he said that by the middle of the second showing, he had fallen asleep. He was pretty much snoring during like the Senate council stuff.
That movie's
so awful. I still haven't watched the third one. I mean, I don't see a point. I've seen the no part, and that seems...
Yeah.
That's pretty much the whole movie.
Yeah.
That's no. It's actually a review of, should I watch this movie? And then that's kind of... It's a built-in response. It's very meta.
It's the best of the new ones, though, I think.
It is.
That's not saying much.
It's still a bad movie.
Yeah. That's like when I take a crap in the morning, I'm like, this poo is the best of my poops.
That's like saying Saw 1 is the best of the Saw series, which it is.
It is.
Which it is.
But, I'd say that the third episode 3 in Star Wars is better than like X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Oh,
that
movie X-Men Origins Wolverine is pretty bad.
Yeah, that movie really sucked a lot, like big time.
I didn't see it, but I heard things, so I'm not gonna.
Did you hear stuff similar to what we just said?
Well, and I would say also that episode 3 probably is better than Transformers 2.
Yeah,
I haven't seen that movie either.
Transformers 2 is a massive disaster.
Much like this podcast.
Yeah, pretty much. I think the original name was actually going to be Transformers 2 TRL, but we sued them.
Three red lights. What would happen if a Transformer had three red lights?
That's what happens. Optimus Prime dies at the end because he gets a three red light flash on his chest and he just falls over.
Like, oh, damn it. Somebody send me my cardboard coffin.
Yeah, but
they don't send those anymore.
Yeah, no. Don't worry. They put him in a cardboard box, sent him back to Microsoft, then returned him and he was all better.
Then no, he had to go
to... Is this Optimus Prime? I'm over 3 years old. It's like, yeah, it's a launch system. Don't worry.
It's
a prime.
Bumblebee had to call Max. He was like, hey, Max, hi, I would like to help you.
You had to go to like Xbox Heaven for a second and talk to a bunch of like Xbox elders.
Jeff Bell's there.
They're all like elites with like 500 gig hard drives.
Speaking of great movies, because Transformers 2 was horrible and so was the other one we talked about, whatever it was.
Doesn't matter.
G.I. Joe is also bad, but did anybody see Zombieland?
No, I haven't seen that yet.
Oh my god, so far that's the best movie I've seen this year.
Is that game of the year?
That's game of the year right now. It's pretty
is
hilarious.
It pretty much Dead Rising the movie? Because that's what the trailer looked like.
Yes, it's as funny as Dead Rising 2. It's great, and it's got probably one of the coolest cameos of all time. So,
Is it Burt Bacharach?
It is not, but it's almost as good. And stay through to the credits because that cameo does make a second appearance at the very end of the credits that you don't want to miss. But yeah, Zombieland, one thing they get right. Transformers 2 was like 2.5 hours long. The movie is under an hour and a half long. Yeah. So for like a funny, dumb zombie movie, it's like the perfect length. Like it never gets slow. They kill plenty of zombies. It's really, really funny. Like all the actors are good. Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Yeah. Nicholas Cooper writes in that...
What's up?
Ryan Clements, who was on last week's podcast, sounds like McLovin, apparently.
Ooh.
All right.
Yeah, last week's podcast when I think we played Nicolas Cage clips for about half of the entire podcast.
I did.
He can write in and say what I sound like for next week, then.
Yeah, there you go. There's an assignment. What does Jim sound like? Jim, what do you think you sound like?
I don't know. I don't think I've ever really talked about that.
I think you sound like if a McNugget could talk.
Really?
Yeah.
I figure McNuggets would have a higher pitched voice. It can be like, "Hey, I'm a McNugget."
Well, I figure that would be sort of the joke of it. Is that McNuggets actually just have sort of a gruff voice and beards?
I don't really listen to myself that often because I don't like the sound of my voice. So
it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
The sound of Jim's voice or just hearing your own voice?
Jim's voice.
Please stop emailing about where the Cabela's Big Game Hunter 2010 review is.
Where is it, Charles?
It's on the way. I have a backlog. And not a for-fun backlog, a for-work backlog that I have to get through. And, it'll show up eventually.
Do you have the feeling of, like, being pregnant and your baby's, like, a month late and you're just like, please, get it out of me?
Like, I hope it's not twins. I don't even know what that means.
Well, there were two Cabela games that came out, so technically it is twins.
Oh, God. Okay, well, this might be an interesting one from Stephen M., talking about Natal. He says, Natal sounds like a good idea, but what would make it even better would be if they had a Natal game where you do some parkour, stuff like in Mirror's Edge. But to do it right, you have to run on chairs, your coffee table, and you have to use... And you have to have your younger sister lay on the ground so she can run and jump off her to get extra points. What do you guys think?
Well, I don't have any furniture in my apartment, so that doesn't work for me.
Do you have a younger sister you can hop off
maybe
her
they
face?
Could, maybe they could pack it in like a Target deal. Get the Natal parkour game with like a Chinette set or something. I don't know.
This would pretty much be the most impossible game to make ever. But if they can make a game with Natal where you made like a pillow fort, and it recognized what your fort was and somehow translated that into the game. And I don't know what they would... It would be some kind of strategy game, but you would actually be in your fort and doing stuff. But that would be the most fun. I would play that game for the rest of my life.
Well, Rampart.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm going to comment on the pillow fort, because the pillow fort is sweet. And I'm not going to deny that I haven't built pillow forts in my
lifetime.
Everybody has. Because they're awesome. Yeah. But the thing
did
is...
Did you build them on a lava field? Where you can't step on the carpet.
If it was a red carpet, it was a lava field, obviously. Yeah.
Well, see, that's the thing, though. Building the pillow fort is great, and like even draping a blanket over it so there's no light coming in, because then, I mean, it's serious fort action going on there. But then once you're in the fort, you don't do anything.
Unless you built your fort with the TV in it, which was what we used to do.
Oh, see, I've never done that. Yeah. I always built the fort, and then I was like...
inside it, and no one can know.
Oh, that's a really good idea.
Mm-hmm. I would just pretend there's things out there that I'm shooting at, like...
Well, you're safe.
That's why a Natal game would be so great. You would actually be shooting at stuff on the screen while popping out of your fort.
That's an interesting idea. But see, I would never want the fort to... I would be really depressed if the fort was breached.
See, I would be really depressed if they made this game exactly like what I wanted, except they had really cartoony graphics because it was made for like 6-year-olds.
Yeah.
And you were like, you know, shooting banana guns and stuff. And
yeah,
like,
I'd want a modern, like, dark and gritty pillow fort.
I'd want
game.
It to be what I imagined when I was a kid, which was like, you know, I'd built Camelot.
It'd be sort of like, it'd be pillow fort, but it would be like medieval Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Make it happen, somebody.
All right, pillow
with
fort
way
game.
More talent than us.
Pillow fort games.
Wait, the question is, will Pillow Fort Natal have RPG elements?
If we can get of enough course. Funding, RPG elements will make this game.
You have to put in RPG elements, even if it's just a menu option that doesn't lead anywhere.
I think it'll have Twitter, too, as well.
Oh, yeah, it'll have Twitter and Facebook.
Of course, Twitter and Facebook functionality.
You can also listen to Last FM while you're playing.
Gaming's over. It's over.
Twitter functionality.
All right, we should probably start wrapping this up. Let's do one or two more.
Well, I've got this one. What I might as well just read this now since I'm holding it, and I'm sure everyone's sick of hearing shuffling paper noises at this point.
from paper, jeez.
What? You got to print stuff out on paper. What do you want me to print it out on? I can print it out on crackers. I don't think that would run through the copier very well.
It could be tastier, though.
Yeah, it would be tastier. So Matthew Rainey writes in, a YouTube link, which I will audio click. I don't know how to...
We're going to put that in the story because it's awesome.
Okay, so...
Everyone should just go to our webpage, xbox360.ign.com, and find the story because we're going to embed the YouTube.
And, yeah, the story will be up on the front page there somewhere. Mm-hmm. And the subject of the email, just to give a little indication, is Power Wheels Warthog. Whatever that could mean...
All right, I think we're out of time.
It's pretty awesome.
If you want to write in for next week, we have an email address, 3redlights@ign.com. There's no numbers in there. It's all words. And you can feel free to rate us on iTunes if you think we're amazing. And even if you think we're bad, you can go rate us on iTunes.
Yes, but do send us emails because we will read them.
Yep.
As long as they're not completely incomprehensible. Like, I need you to tell me if I could sign to Def Jam. I don't know. I can't answer that question. Sheldon smiles with a Z.
All right. For Hillary Goldstein and Charles.
Wait, you missed the last part. I need you to tell me if I could sign to Def Jam in Jamaica. I'm good.
I don't know what that means.
Yes.
Well, there. Actually, I just disproved the point I made directly before reading that.
Well, I would like to say I would like to offer Sheldon Smiles. We at Def Jam would like to offer you a contract. Unfortunately, our contracts are not valid in Jamaica. Aww. So, yeah.
Oh, void in Jamaica.
All right. Poor Hillary Goldstein and Charles Onyet and Jim Riley. I am Eric Bredvig, and we're done.
Hello, dear stranger.
I'd like to introduce you to something new. Or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.